This is Primal Potential, and I am your host, Elizabeth Benton. Primal Potential is about you. Your ability to change is not defined by yesterday and doesn't need to wait until tomorrow. Your transformation is now. Let's get started.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal Potential podcast. I am Elizabeth Benton, and we're doing something a little bit different today, which I feel like you've heard me say a lot lately, but that is what it is. Today, at your request, I am going to be sharing some of the details of our son Roman's birth story and first almost couple of weeks of life. If you had not yet heard, our son was born on Sunday, May 2nd at 3:13 in the morning, and I posted that on social media, so if you haven't seen those pictures, you can go check them out. I asked on Instagram, okay, who wants to hear the birth story, the details, the updates, how we're doing on the podcast? 94% of you said you did. So if you fall into the camp of the other 6% that's like, I really don't care at all, beautiful thing about podcasts, just skip this episode. But if you are part of the 94% who said that you were curious and wanted to hear, that is what we're going to do today. And if you hear some little moans or grunts or whimpers, baby is about 1 foot away from me, currently sleeping. So we will see if we get through this without him waking up. So let's dive in. I'll give you guys the background story. I'll catch you up to speed. I'll answer the questions I've been getting in terms of, did I have a VBAC? Did I have a C-section? How much did he weigh? All of those questions we will get into. And again, if you are part of the 6% that's like, I'm not here to hear about your son's birth, cool. I get it. I know it's not everybody's thing. Easy thing to do is just skip this episode. All right, so here's how things started out. I went in to the hospital on April 29th, which is a Thursday, to be induced. We went in the evening. I think my appointment was like 9 o'clock at night or something like that, to be induced. And of course, this goes without saying, but just for the few people that need to hear it, everybody's experience is different. Every hospital birth center has different protocols and procedures and different things like that. So this is just my experience. And I know that people have very different experiences and there's very little kind of that's cut and dry when it comes to protocol, procedure, that sort of thing. One of the interesting things about my induction is that because I had another C-section just 13 months ago, well, 14 now, but I was just over 13 months out from my previous C-section, they were very limited in what they could do to induce. So for example, in a typical induction, you might get something like Cervidil, which is a cervical ripening agent, and Pitocin at the same time. And because I so recently had a C-section, which put me at higher risk for uterine rupture, they don't layer in my situation. They weren't able or willing to layer techniques like that. So essentially, if you're induced, you have a lower likelihood of successfully going into labor because there are fewer options that can be taken to get you there. So with that in mind, I knew that ahead of time. I knew that they were going to have to be a lot more conservative in their induction approach just because I had a C-section with our daughter Dagny last March. And for those of you that don't know, our daughter died unexpectedly at just 2 weeks old. So this is also an interesting time for me because we're not yet at that 2 week mark with Roman. And I'll touch on that and kind of my emotions, and I get emotional even saying that. This will be interesting. Okay, so our appointment was at 9 p.m. and I knew that Chris was going to drive me there. And I knew that he wouldn't be able to come in until I was checked into labor and delivery. So I first went in and got checked into triage. And that's where the induction was going to start, in triage, until they had a bed ready for me in labor and delivery. And the poor nurse who kind of got me checked in and got me started and all of that kind of stuff, she said, why are you here for an induction? And all of a sudden, I just like burst into hysterical tears. I think where my mind went was I was there for an induction because Dagny died last year, right? That's why we were in Boston. That's why the process was different. That's why our options were different. And in like preparing to share that with her, I just like burst into tears. And I think she felt really bad for me because at that point she was like, do you have a support person here? And I was like, yeah, my husband's, you know, in the car waiting until we can get into labor and delivery. And she said, oh, honey, you're not going to labor and delivery anytime soon. You'll probably be in triage overnight. And I was like, he has to stay in the car all night. And I think because she felt bad that I just almost immediately started crying when she asked that question, she said, we'll find a way to get him in here. And those restrictions are because of COVID and how the hospital's handling that and whatnot. So that was really, really fortunate that Chris was able to come in instead of being kept from me for 12 plus hours. The downside to that is he comes in, I'm in this little triage room, and it's not really a room. It was an exam table, so essentially like a metal table with a pad on it, and then a small chair in the corner, and like, of course, we have all our stuff, and it's like jammed in everywhere, and Chris was like, am I supposed to sleep in this chair? And I was like, am I supposed to sleep on this metal table? No, I wasn't supposed to sleep because I was going to be getting a balloon catheter, which even if I was like on the most comfortable bed in the world, probably wouldn't have been sleeping much. So when we realized that we wouldn't be moving to labor and delivery until the following morning, I told Chris, I was like, go to a hotel. You know, there are hotels within walking distance. Nothing's going to happen here in the next few hours. And I knew that if he stayed up all night on night one, it would just be better for everybody if he got a good night's sleep. So I did want him to be within walking distance in case something came up that he could get back to me really quickly. And it just so happened that the hotel that was closest and walking distance and had availability was the same hotel that we stayed in the night before Dagny died. And so that, you know, had me all emotional. Honestly, I think anything at that point would have had me just in a very complex emotional place. So Chris left. It was my idea. I was very okay with it. He said several times, like, I'll be fine. I'll stay in the chair. We'll figure something out. And I was like, honestly, I know for sure that I handle lack of sleep better than he handles lack of sleep, and it would be much more pleasant for all of us. So he left, and within a matter of probably an hour or two, the doctor came in, checked me out, and started the balloon catheter. For those of you that don't know, you can Google it for all the like accurate details, but essentially they put a catheter up into through the cervix to the other side of the cervix, and then they inflate a balloon. And the balloon essentially acts like the baby's head, putting downward pressure on the cervix to get it to soften, to get it to open up. And the plan was to leave the balloon in for 12 hours. The downside, well, there were a few, like there was no bathroom in my room. So there you have full-term pregnancy, already have to go to the bathroom constantly. And I was trying to stay really well hydrated because I know that's very important for the progression of labor. And you have this balloon inflated, which just adds pressure on the bladder from a different angle. So every single time I had to get up, I had to like walk down the hall and take off the monitors. The other frustrating thing for me was that they wanted to monitor the baby, which is fine. That was great. But that meant I couldn't be up and walking around. But to be perfectly honest, because of COVID, they don't even let you walk the halls. So I would have had like a 2-foot area to pace. So I really wanted, even with an induction, to be able to like move and walk freely. However, because of COVID, even if I hadn't been on monitors, that wouldn't have been an option. So that was kind of a bummer because, as I said, this wasn't a hospital bed that I was on overnight. It was truly an exam table. So it's like a metal table with a thin pad. not comfortable, especially pregnant, tired, and with a catheter pressing against your cervix. So 12 hours later, around that time, we got moved into labor and delivery. So we had a little bit more space. We had a kind of more traditional room with a bathroom in it. Chris came back in the morning from the hotel, and I was all night long. Of course, I was awake. I was like imagining, visualizing my cervix thinning out, opening up, blah, blah, blah. They remove the catheter and check me, and I'm still 1 centimeter. So I was kind of like bummed, but also they were very, very upfront about the fact that inductions take longer and are generally less successful in my circumstance where they're much more limited in what they can do. So I was like, you know what? It's only been 12 hours. At that point, with the balloon removed, they said, let's start on Pitocin. Let's get your uterus contracting. And so we started on a very low dose of Pitocin, going up in dose every 20 to 30 minutes. And throughout the course of the day, my contractions were like 2 to 3 minutes apart. And when it got to that point, they didn't want to increase the Pitocin anymore because until you're further dilated, they don't want you contracting more frequently than that. They want the baby to get a break. They want you to get a break. And it's just not really helpful at that point to contract more than that. But as you can imagine, contracting every 2 to 3 minutes, they weren't like super intense, but they were definitely noticeable, uncomfortable. You're not like just hanging out enjoying life. So, you know, it was fine, but it wasn't pleasant. And probably I should have wrote down the time so I knew how long that was going on. But honestly, I don't remember. So probably in the window of like 12 to 16 hours of that before they checked me again, and I was still 1 centimeter. And I was definitely more frustrated at that point, especially because I've been sitting, laying down. I was trying to change position a lot because my butt was getting sore. But you can't change position too much because every single time I moved, then the monitor that was monitoring the baby would need to be adjusted and the nurse would have to come back in and all this kind of stuff. So I was getting a little stir crazy. I think Chris definitely was as well. In hindsight, we should have brought like games with us or something. I'm not a movie watcher. So while Chris is content to hang out and watch movies, that is just, I'm not a movie watcher. So I was just like, we should have been more prepared with things to do because, again, can't walk through the hallways because of COVID. So there was that. After the Pitocin and them realizing this didn't really move you forward any, they decided we were going to go back to the balloon catheter, but they were going to do it differently this time, which meant they had to stop the Pitocin because, again, in my situation, we couldn't layer those induction methods. Instead of just one balloon, they were going to do two, right? So the first time, the catheter goes up inside the cervix to the other side of the cervix, gets inflated and puts downward pressure just like the baby's head would. This time there's two balloons. There's one in the vagina, one inside the cervix. So one kind of pressing up on the cervix, the other pressing down on the cervix. You can imagine how comfortable that was. And just having to go to the bathroom constantly. And they said, let's let this do its job for 12 more hours. And I was literally like, come on. The good thing is that they were able to check me around that. So we didn't have to wait the full 12 hours. I think probably 6 hours in, they were able to check again and see if I had dilated kind of beyond the balloon. They could check around it. And I hadn't. So at that point, we were having conversations like, what's the next step from here? Do we want to go back to Pitocin if this is ineffective? And do we want to break your water? What do we want to do? And essentially what we decided on was that if after another 12 hours now with two balloons, we were 3 centimeters or more dilated, then they would break my water. If I was still one, we'd probably go for the C-section. Just because also at this point, they had told me no more eating, nothing but clear fluids. Actually, no more eating. And I think at some point, definitely, I know at some point in that second balloon catheter phase, there was not even any clear liquids. So I was hungry, I was thirsty, and they didn't want me continuing to labor indefinitely with no food, with no liquid, if, you know, it could have been another 24 hours and we'd still end up in the operating room. So we were in this position that, like, okay, at the 12-hour mark, they're going to check me. And if I am 3 centimeters or more, they're going to break my water. We're going to keep going with trying to have a VBAC, keep going with what they call the TOLAC or trial of labor after cesarean. And if I'm 1, we'll go and we'll schedule the C-section. Of course, Chris and I, after the doctors leave the room, we're like, well, what if I'm 2? what if I'm two? What if I'm 2.5? What if I'm 1.5? And my prayer at that point was just like, make it clear, right? Either we're 3 or more or we're 1, but I didn't want to be in that position of like, okay, we're 1.5. Do we keep trying to labor or do we go to the operating room? And look, I have been very open about the fact that it was my desire, because of the size of the family we want, to have a VBAC. And I feel like a C-section is not optimal for me, for our future family, for, you know, recovery, for a million different things. But at the same time, the very, very, very most important thing is that baby was healthy and that I was healthy. And I just kept reminding myself of that. So when the doctor came in to do that final check, they were running a little bit behind. So it had been 13 or 14 hours with those 2 balloons. And honestly, I felt like things were happening. I was uncomfortable. I had been having contractions. I had been having increasingly uncomfortable contractions. Plus the balloons themselves are like unpleasant. And she came in to do the check, and I'm sure everybody is sensitive to different degrees, but my cervix was so high that the checks were extremely uncomfortable, more uncomfortable than contractions. So she comes in, and I knew that this was like decision time. So she comes in to do the check, and she was searching around more than I felt was normal, right? Like, I know and have been through this, these checks, not only with this delivery, but with Dagny, enough to know that, like, they go up, they feel pretty quickly if you're dilated, they're in and out. But she was, like, exploring, we'll say, a little bit more. And it made me nervous. It made me really nervous. Like, what is she doing? What is she looking for? And she stopped the exam. She removed her hand and she said, I'm going to go get a bedside ultrasound. And at that point, every spidey sense, every maternal instinct, every fear, worry, everything just went on like level 10. And I said, why? And she said, it doesn't feel the way I would expect it to feel. It doesn't feel the way it felt last time. And I was like, you're not talking about dilation, are you? And she just said, no, I'm going to go get an ultrasound. I want to do a bedside ultrasound. Give me a few minutes to get the equipment. And I kept saying, what is wrong? And Chris was saying, nothing's wrong. Nothing's wrong. They're just going to do an ultrasound. And I said, if nothing was wrong, she would have said nothing is wrong. But she didn't say nothing was wrong. And this doctor was still in the room when I said that. And even then, she didn't say nothing was wrong. And keep in mind, guys, that in the back of my head is the loss that we experienced with Dagny, and how in our experience with her, everybody said everything was healthy and fine, and she was healthy and fine, and she wasn't, right? Of course, she was at first, and then she wasn't. And so that fear was just very, very, very real. Plus, I'm exhausted at this point, and, you know, hungry and tired and all of those things. And I had a full-scale meltdown. I mean, she was probably only gone for 4 or 5 minutes, but I was absolutely terrified. Like, what did you feel or not feel? What the heck happened? Of course, meanwhile, I can see baby's heartbeat is still strong because I'm being monitored and whatnot, but it terrified the hell out of me. So she comes back in the room with the ultrasound 4 or 5 minutes later, at which point she says, I'm just not feeling his head, and I think he might have changed positions since your last check. And I'm like, you could have said that. You just could have said, you know what, everything's fine, baby's heart rate looks fine, you are fine, I want to get an ultrasound to make sure that he didn't change positions because I'm not feeling his head in the same place with the same pressure that I did last time. So I was kind of pissed off that she didn't just say that. She could tell that I was like freaking terrified. All she had to do was say that. So I was not pleased at that point in time. And poor Chris was like, great, now, now she's just had a total meltdown. And I wanted Chris to be part of this episode, but just scheduling wise, he's already back to work and baby and yeah, he's not. So, and he probably wouldn't have too much to add other than everything went fine. So she does the ultrasound. I still didn't know at that point if I was 3 centimeters, 4 centimeters, 1 centimeter, anything. She does the ultrasound and sure enough, he's still head down. So no worries there. But of course, then I'm like, all right, what's the deal with my cervix? And she said, you're still 1 centimeter. And at that point, it was clear to all of us, everybody was in agreement. Even if you listening are not in agreement, that's okay. Nobody knows our situation more than, you know, we do and our care team that we have great, great, great confidence in. The choice was clear to have a C-section, which, again, was not what I was hoping for. But I also had a lot of fear around that. And it's probably obvious. I had fear around every phase of this. So had we proceeded, I would have been nervous about a vaginal delivery. I was certainly nervous about a C-section. And it was a very, very different experience than my C-section with Dagny, because my C-section with Dagny was an emergency. For those of you that are, you know, were around here then when I shared that story, I spiked a fever early in labor with Dagny. And when it hit 104, it was like, we're going to the operating room. Like, it happened fast. There was no consent. Like, you know, I'm sure that they had Chris sign something, but they didn't take the time to go through all the consent forms. I didn't, you know, have those long drawn out conversations with everybody and all of that kind of stuff. So that was a very, very different experience here, because it wasn't emergency. We were still going. They said, we'll probably get you down to the OR within 30 minutes, which felt really fast, but not nearly as fast as when I went with Dagny. So of course, they come in, they have all the conversations. You can probably imagine, if you haven't ever been a part of these conversations, like, you could die. We might have to remove your uterus. We could nick your internal organs. We could cut the baby. You know, the baby could die. Blah, 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 blah. We could paralyze you. And I'm like, I actually prefer the version of this where we don't have to go through all of this. But that was what it was. And then we headed down to the operating room. Meanwhile, I forgot to mention that we had hired a doula to help us, but she hadn't come in yet because I wasn't far enough along. And so at this point I was like, well, there goes the money we spent on the doula, because you don't get a refund, unfortunately. And I was just kind of like, okay, text her and let her know, like, you can go to sleep, because they weren't going to let more than Chris in the operating room, and there was really no sense in having her there anyway. So that was a little bit frustrating. And then we headed down, and I will tell you with total certainty that I was far more nervous, scared, anxious, worried going into this C-section than I was going into Dagny's. And I think it's just because I had seen the worst of the worst of the worst with her, and that was just so recent. It's not like it was, you know, 5, 6 years ago or even 2 years ago. It was just 1 year ago. And so I was really terrified. And to be very fair and just sharing all the colors of this, especially as somebody who does a lot of mindset work, I still, in the days leading up to knowing I was induced, I was very emotional, and hormones are absolutely a part of that. And PTSD is absolutely a part of that. But I had this need to get everything in order. Like, I created a 4-page document of everything that would need to be done if I were to die, because my risk of uterine rupture was higher, and I knew that. And I just, what happened to us with Dagny, we now know there was about a 1 in 8 million chance of us experiencing what we experienced. 1 in 8 million. So when people say like, oh, your risk of uterine rupture is like 1 in 100, I'm like, that doesn't help me, because what happened to us with Dagny was 1 in 8 million. And so I put together a 4-page document about, you know, everything from like what would need to happen with my business, step by step by step by step, and what, you know, bank accounts have what information and all the passwords and, you know, my lawyer's contact information and my accountant's contact information and all of this different stuff. And I went over all of that with Chris. And even, you know, in the day or two before I was induced, a couple of our friends reached out to us and they were like, hey, how are you doing? Is there anything I can do? And my honest answer to them was, if something happens to me, take care of Chris and take care of the baby. And I said to my cousin who reached out to me, I said, you know, make sure that Chris always feels like family, even if I'm not here. So I was going into that C-section with like all of this in my mind, that was a very real outcome. Just like 1 in 8 million with Dagny was a very real outcome. That was our lived experience. So poor Chris, I mean, I was like level 10 fearful just because of what we've been through and that lives in our bodies. And as we walked down and got into the hallway where all the operating rooms are, you know, operating rooms have a very distinct look. They're bright white. The lights are brighter than any other room in the hospital. They're cooler in temperature than other rooms. And as we walked down there, and they were showing Chris where to sit until I got settled and situated on the table and got my epidural and all of that, it hit me like a freaking freight train that the last time I went into an operating room was when they rushed me in the day before Dagny died, and she was 13 days old, and Chris wasn't there yet because I had ridden with her to the hospital in the ambulance, and Chris was still behind in the car. And they were like, we're losing her. We need mom in here to say goodbye. And that was the last time I was in an operating room. And I hadn't really thought about that. But walking into that operating room, like, it just hit me like a freaking freight train. And I stopped because I had a nurse on each side of me. Chris was right behind me. And I was literally just like, okay, what other options do I have? I don't know if I can do this. You know, like, do we just wait it out? Give him a few more days, see what happens. Like, what do we do? I felt not good about going in there, but we had such amazing doctors and such amazing nurses, and they all knew about Dagny, and we brought the bunny that holds her remains with us to the hospital. And so she was in our labor and delivery room. Of course, we didn't bring her down to the OR, but they knew. They were so sensitive to that. I feel like they cared for me in a way that reflected that, like very much understanding my fear and also my sadness. You know, I was so sad. I still am so sad that she's not part of this with us the way that we hoped she would be, the way that we wanted her to be, the way that we planned for her to be. So, I was a wreck in that operating room. Holy moly, I was a wreck. Every sound, you know, every beep, like a bunch of the doctors' pagers went off. And I was just like, why do your pagers have to sound like something flatlining? You know, like, why? Can't we just make it like a Bach ringtone or something like that? I can laugh about it now, but I was straight up terrified every 2 seconds. Am I okay? Is the baby okay? Are we okay? What is that? What is this? You know, God bless them. But they were all wonderful and amazing. As soon as the actual surgery started, I started throwing up. And if you have never had the experience of throwing up while your abdomen has been cut open and you have no feeling from the waist down and you're tied to a table, it is mighty unpleasant. Like, probably the most unpleasant thing ever. So they're like suctioning my mouth. I'm shaking. The shaking is very, very normal. Number one, we learned very clearly that I tremble when I'm scared. And I did that with Dagny, but it was just a lot more obvious this time. It was a lot more prevalent. So I'm trembling, but also with the anesthesia, it's very, very common to like have tremors. So my arms and my face and my teeth, like everything is like shaking, chattering, and I'm puking and they're suctioning it out. Like it was so awful. And then like in my family, we tend to often use humor in like really sad or uncomfortable or difficult moments. And in my mind, I'm thinking like, what is my husband thinking? Like this is the most unattractive presentation of like shaking, puking, tied to a table, legs open, like completely bare. So that was entertaining, although in the moment I was probably more miserable and terrified than entertained. But you know how I'm sure if you haven't had a C-section, you probably know this about C-sections. They do go pretty quickly. And before we knew it, baby boy was born, and there was like two curtains in front of me. There was like a clear plastic one, and then there was a blue one, so that, you know, Chris couldn't see all of the surgical process and whatnot. They lowered the blue one, and then they put baby on the plastic one, which they didn't do with Dagny. I think they were a lot more concerned with Dagny because my fever had been so high, so they rushed her off pretty quickly. But we had asked for delayed cord clamping with this baby. So for a full minute, they put him on the plastic, which is on my face. So while on the one hand, I'm like, oh my gosh, he's here. And I'm like looking at him and, you know, he had so much hair. On the other hand, I'm like, there is plastic on my face and a baby on the plastic. Like, is anybody concerned that like I'm going to suffocate or that baby is going to, like, who's making sure that we can breathe here? So that was really funny that they literally put the baby on the plastic on my face. I have some entertaining pictures of that. But I was first struck by the fact that he had a full head of hair, which I did not expect. Dagny did not have a full head of hair at all. He looked so small to me. Like, I honestly thought that he was like maybe 5 or 6 pounds just by looking at him. Like, he looked so much smaller than I expected him to. And it was great that they left him there for a full minute before they cut the cord and took him over to weigh him and do his Apgar and all of that kind of stuff. Which the whole time I'm like talking to Chris, am I okay? Is he okay? Like literally that was probably all I said. Am I okay? Is he okay? Am I okay? Is he okay? But he was good. He was screaming from the jump. Like he just was very, very vocal for quite a while. He weighed 7 pounds, 8 ounces and was 19 inches long. So he definitely wasn't as much of a peanut as he appeared to be to me, but, healthy, screaming, all of those things, you know, pinked up really, really quickly. And it always feels like it takes so much longer for them to like sew you up and get you cleaned up. It probably does in reality take a lot longer. But I was just very eager for them to finish up so that I could hold them, because I knew that they would let me hold him as they wheeled me back up to the room. And I just really wanted that. But in the meantime, Chris was holding him really close to my face. And all of a sudden, like, Chris didn't look normal. He didn't look good. And I wasn't sure, neither Chris or I like needles or for ourselves, right? Chris is fine seeing that in other people. He's not fine on it for himself. So I expected him to be fine through my C-section, but like, he didn't look fine. And the next thing I know, he's like scanning the room kind of urgently, and I'm here going, you know, thinking like, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with baby? So I'm like, what's wrong? And he was like, I just need to find the pediatric nurse. I don't feel well. And he felt so not well that like he didn't feel safe holding the baby. And then that freaked me out. Like, what's wrong with you? Are you okay? Are you going to faint? Are you going to faint while you're holding the baby? Like, where's the pediatric nurse? Blah, blah, blah. So in fairness to him, he had on like a mask and then a mask over his beard and then like a thing over his head and scrubs over his clothes. I think he overheated. And also I think he was a little overwhelmed because like when he was walking from my head to where they were weighing the baby, you know, my intestines are sitting on my chest. And, you know, he says that part didn't bother him. I don't really know how that can, like, not bother a person. But so there was that. He handed the baby off to the pediatric nurse, which made me instantly anxious. Like, I didn't want anybody holding him but us. But, of course, Chris needed to leave. And then I'm like, are they going to let him back in? Is he, like, leaving the room and he's just going to go collapse? Is he having a heart attack? Is he having a stroke? These are all the things that's happening in my mind as I'm deliriously tired, you know, hormonal, afraid, all of those kinds of things. Real strong moment for me. Real strong moment. And then I couldn't see the baby. I didn't know if he had left the room. Had they taken him somewhere? So then I'm like, where's the baby? Where's the baby? And he was just on the other side of the curtain. And so they brought him over closer to me so I could see him. And eventually Chris came back and he was okay. I don't really know what happened there. He didn't look like himself for a good couple hours, but he may have just overheated. So that was the C-section. We got back to the room. They're really wonderful about, you know, rooming in and not taking the baby away. He was born at 3:13 in the morning. He didn't have to leave for anything. He was with us the whole time. He nursed right away. All of that was really strong and positive. They had me get up within 6 hours, which is, you know, what they did the last time. And I'll say this. My physical recovery so far, you know, we're only 12 days out, and if anybody knows that things can change quickly, I am that person. So far, my physical recovery has been so much easier this time around with the C-section than the first time. And of course, everybody has different experiences with C-sections for sure, and I think that there are a lot of factors in terms of, like, your surgeon and your incision and, you know, any number. There's so many different factors that impact, you know, one C-section is not the same thing as somebody else's C-section. But I remember with Dagny, I needed help getting up and down. And not only did I need help getting up and down, things like I couldn't bend down and touch the floor for probably at least a week, if not 10 days, meaning I could go to the bathroom on my own. But like when I got out of the shower, if I needed to put on underwear, like from the floor onto your legs, I needed Chris's help. And this time I haven't needed any of that. I have not had help getting up. I have not needed help with getting dressed or anything. So it's certainly unpleasant for the first few days to get up and move around and all of that. It has been a lot easier and I've been a lot more independent. I've been entirely independent, really. So that has been great. After 24 hours, for me, in my situation, they just move you to like Motrin and Tylenol. And I only even took that for a day. So 48 hours after the C-section, I was off, even the Tylenol and the Motrin. So no pain meds. I certainly had discomfort. I still do with certain movements, but I'm really, really happy with the physical recovery. And I'm trying to think of what is different. I mean, obviously it's my second experience, so perhaps there's the element of I know what to expect, perhaps there's the element of my body knows what to expect, but there's also the theory that, like, because I just did this, you know, 13 months ago, that might make it harder for my body. Who knows? One thing that I had my heart set on, like almost ridiculously so, was I wanted to make sure that I had Edge, the mood, motivation, metabolism drink that I talked about on the show a couple weeks ago. I wanted to make sure I had that before I went into the hospital. And I literally was like reaching out to people in the company going like, can you overnight me mine? We didn't end up having to do that. It got to me naturally, I think a day or two before we went in for the induction. But maybe it was entirely placebo effect, but I think that that helped with energy. I think that it helped not being so miserably tired. I also think that it helped with that physical body energy of like getting up and getting down while being really tired. And I think it helped with my mood a little bit too. So that has been huge. I have been having a double dose of Edge every single day. The only exception was the day before he was born, because I was already off like fluids and stuff like that. I think that has made a really, really, really big difference. So that is great. He was born on Sunday morning. We went home on Wednesday afternoon, the typical like 3-day post C-section stay. I've since learned that you can request to go home earlier than that. And I even thought about asking before I kind of had done some homework once we got home. But because of our experience with Dagny, I just wanted to take an abundance of caution. And especially too, because we live like an hour and a half with no traffic away from the hospital, I didn't want to rush getting home, even though I was like really, really eager to be in my own space and not have people coming in every 10 or 15 minutes. There were also COVID restrictions on visitors. I think you can only have visitors after delivery once you're up on the postpartum floor, and it's like one person per day. So my mom did come one day, my sister came one day before we knew about the rules. Chris's parents came up, but because my mom had already been there, they didn't let them in, so that was a real bummer, and we were super frustrated about that, but you know, is what it is. It's just boring being there in the hospital. And even if you want to rest between people coming in to check baby's vitals and check my vitals and, you know, do all those millions of different things, there's just no rest. But on the plus side, the nurses were amazing. The lactation consultants were super, super helpful. So that was great. We got home on Wednesday and baby's first pediatrician appointment was Thursday. I will say that when we got home and I held Roman in the same places where I held Dagny, like full-blown meltdown. I knew that it could be very complex having him here with Dagny not here, and the memories of Dagny at home as a newborn compared to the memories of him, and it has been harder than I thought that it would be. The physical recovery has been easier than I thought it would be. The emotional navigating has been a lot harder. I have had many, many meltdowns, more than I thought that I would and more intensely than I thought that I would. Beginning with just sitting on the couch with him the way that I sat on the couch with her, or seeing him lay on Chris's chest the way that Dagny laid on Chris's chest, like all of those things have been extremely hard for me, and I'm okay with that. It hurts. It is painful. I don't wish it on my worst enemy, but I also know that it is very normal for me to feel that way, and I'm just like allowing it. So the following day, on Thursday, we got home on Wednesday afternoon, late afternoon, early evening. Thursday, we had our first pediatrician appointment. We did get a different pediatrician than we had with Dagny. I needed a different experience. And it was a very different experience. I felt a lot better about the care that he was getting from his pediatrician. And perhaps part of that was the fact that they knew our experience with Dagny, and they were just in tune to that. And I had different questions and different concerns because of our experience with Dagny. Like, for example, I really have been concerned about his weight. Not that there's been any problem. There hasn't. He's a champ. Though we won't know for sure for a couple days when we go back to the pediatrician, they want him back at his birth weight by 14 days. Like, I'm sure, like 99.9% sure that he'll be back there. Dagny struggled to put on weight. And so we really wanted to be on top of that. And it's tricky when you're breastfeeding because you don't know how much they're getting at any given feeding. But I have a baby scale this time, and so we knew that we would be monitoring that at home. And our pediatrician really wanted to monitor it as well. And they were so much more informative, even at the hospital. Like, they told us, and perhaps this is because of our experience with Dagny that they told us, but these aren't conversations we had with Dagny, that they expected to see the biggest drop in weight after 24 hours, and then a smaller drop after that, and then either even in a smaller drop or kind of starting to level out at that third day mark, and then beginning to climb back up around day 4, day 5. That's what they wanted to see. So that really helped me in understanding. He did have a big drop after 24 hours, which they expect to see even more so when mom has been on IV fluids, and I had been while I was laboring, as well, of course, as during and after the C-section. But then the following day, there was an even smaller drop. So those things were like really encouraging to me. And the pediatrician continued with that really great communication about that. And he was starting to gain weight by Friday. So we came home on Wednesday. Thursday, he was either around the same or down just a tiny bit, like an ounce or two. And then the following day, he was up a couple of ounces. So that was really great. And then we've continued to weigh him at home. So that's how we know, like, he's basically back to his birth weight at this point, which is amazing. And I feel so good about that. But the experience has just been very different. It was different in the hospital. It was different with the pediatricians. It's also been very different at home. And every baby is different too, right? So on the one hand, every baby is different, and you might have one baby that's a great eater and one baby that's not a great eater. You might have one baby that's a great sleeper and one that's not, one that cries a lot and one that's really chill. But for me, comparing those things has been real tough. It's just been very emotional, and I knew that it would be. So I feel glad that I have doctors that are, you know, checking in on me, and family that's checking in on me, and a husband that's checking in on me, and all of you guys and your prayers. But I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It has been very hard. I'm thrilled that Roman is here. I love him to pieces. I am so grateful to have him, and I savor every single second with him because I know how short the time can be. And it's been very, very hard. It's been very hard. And it's funny, some of my friends have been just so helpful and supportive. And one of the things I don't like to hear is, you're so strong, right? And the reason I don't like to hear it is because I don't feel strong. And I think it's okay to not feel strong. And I think it's like, if you are watching somebody get the shit kicked out of them, right? You're just watching somebody get pummeled in the face by somebody. Are you going to be like, wow, you're so strong? Probably not. That's probably not a helpful thing to say. Like, look at you just standing there taking it. That's not really helpful. And so I've had some friends that are just very welcoming of, I don't even know the right word, of softness. Like my own softness, like my own emotion and my own fragility. Like, that's not a bad thing. It can be a beautiful thing and a healthy thing and a normal thing. So if you're one of those people that reaches out, just for me personally, the whole you're so strong thing doesn't really help. Doesn't really feel fitting. But I've had a lot of people who have just been wonderful. Somebody reached out and said that they wanted to hear a little bit about my breastfeeding journey, especially given that I have an underactive thyroid. And this particular person said, I know that can make breastfeeding more challenging in terms of supply. What has been your approach? Have you had any obstacles? So one thing that has been extremely important to me, and this is going to seem very, very obvious, is staying well hydrated. That is easier said than done when oftentimes you have two hands devoted to baby, right? Holding, feeding, nursing, whatever it is. But I have made it a massive priority to stay hydrated. And like one of the, you know, Chris is always like, I don't know how to help. There's nothing I can't feed him. I can't do this, blah, blah, blah. Make sure I always have water. If my hands are full, like literally hold my cup for me and have me take 10 sips of water or whatever. That is huge. Nutrition is also huge. And I wanted to get right back to like my morning protein smoothie. For those of you that follow me on Instagram, that is one of my staples. And it's just a super easy way, breastfeeding or not breastfeeding, to get in good quality protein and good quality fat. So I got right back to my unsweetened almond milk, my plant protein, my frozen cauliflower in there, a little bit of nut butter, half a banana. And that way I know that I am, at least to start the day, getting in something that is complete, that is giving my body what it needs. The supply thing, I haven't found it impacted by my thyroid, but it really is about demand. So while we were in the hospital, I pumped a little bit. I actually started pumping even before I went into the hospital for my induction. Not a lot because you can overstimulate your breasts, but I would do like 10 minutes on each side once a day just to kind of get that going. And I did the same thing while I was in the hospital, even though there wasn't a lot there. Changing sides, even though in the hospital he really was interested in my left breast but not interested in my right breast, I still kept trying, kept working on that positioning, did manual expression several times. That was huge. I have not found it impacted by my thyroid challenges. However, I have been very, very intentional about nutrition. So drinking enough water, taking my supplements, having my protein shake every day, drinking Edge every day, that has been so huge, so huge. Right now, my priority is taking care of me, number one, and taking care of baby, number two, which might surprise some people that it's not taking care of baby, number one, taking care of me, number two. But the reality is, I can't take good care of him if I'm not taking good care of myself. And that is like so basic right now. So when I had Dagny, I think I was a little bit more engaged with work, with checking email, with checking in with people on my team. And I've been less engaged. I haven't even logged on to Facebook since I think the day before he was born, maybe even 2 days before he was born. And I'm fine with that. There are moments where I'm like, oh, I should check in here. I should do that. And I'm like, no, I shouldn't. What I should do is chill. What I should do is put my feet up. What I should do is, you know, go for a walk outside. What I do is, you know, take a shower, eat well, etc. I also have been really just open about letting people help. Like my mom has brought food, brought groceries, all of that stuff. When I could easily be like, no, Chris can go out and get it. But you know what? If Chris can be here home with me, I would rather have him be here and have my mom go get groceries. So I've been very welcoming of that kind of help. So that's my first priority. I'm definitely 12 days out, very much in the place of like, okay, I want to feel good in my body. I've been very open about the fact that I was heavier when I got pregnant with Roman than I was, you know, for a very, very, very long time, in large part because I gained a lot of weight when I was pregnant with Dagny and I hadn't lost it when I found out I was pregnant with him. And then I gained more weight in this pregnancy. I don't feel really great in my body. Part of that is I just had a C-section. Part of that is body weight. I am in no rush to lose weight, but what I am very eager for, and these are two different things, feeling good in my body, right? Certain foods make me feel good in my body. Certain foods don't. And I want to get back to that. I'm even thinking about, and let me throw this idea out here and see what you guys think. I'm thinking about going through myself and doing a 12 weeks to transformation just for the structure, for the discipline, for the focus on self-care. And I'm thinking about maybe like inviting people to do that with me. Maybe starting like early to mid-June. So going like June, July, August, something like that. I know summer can be tricky, but I think that's all the more reason to have a process and a structure. So message me on Instagram at Elizabeth Benton. Let me know if that's something you'd be interested in, because I'm definitely going to do it for myself to kind of, again, have that structure, have that routine, have that more deliberate, official approach to self-care than kind of winging it. And I thought it might be cool to invite, you know, 50 or 100 people to go through and do it with me. Let me know if that's something you have an interest in or not. What else? Oh, his name. Some of you guys have asked about his name. So his name is Roman. His middle name is Ephraim. And of course, he has Chris's last name, which I use as well. I haven't officially changed it in the business context, but Roman Ephraim Thompson. There's no like really great story to the name Roman. We threw out a lot of boy names and didn't agree on very many of them. I love the name Roman. It means strength. And that is just really beautiful and powerful to me. But also, I've always been drawn to the book of Romans in the Bible, especially, and I'm like winging this. I don't know it off the top of my head. Couldn't cite it for you, but like, do not be transformed do not conform to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. That comes from the book of Romans, and I've really always loved that verse. And Ephraim is also a biblical name, and it means twice fruitful. Twice fruitful. And it just makes me think of Dagny. You guys hear him kind of fussing? Might be coming up on the end of my recording time here. But it means twice fruitful. And I feel that very much, that he was a gift and Dagny was a gift and Dagny is a gift. And twice fruitful, twice blessed by these kiddos that we have or had. So Roman Ephraim Thompson is his name. And he's doing really well. He's a good eater. He's a decent sleeper. And I'm excited to get through, you know, some of these upcoming milestones with him and just give myself the time and space to step back from some work things and have a slower pace of life and also really engage in that journey of making myself feel really good physically, because sometimes in pregnancy it's just complicated. Like, you don't have as many options for working out. For me, my body just didn't feel quite the same and intensity didn't feel quite the same. And there's just different precautions that I was taking. And nutritionally, whether nausea or food aversions, different things like that, that I was sensitive to. I had crazy heartburn when I was pregnant with him. And you know the old wives' tale, like lots of hair, which he did have lots of hair. So that was a factor in nutrition. And now, of course, I have physical restrictions from the C-section and can't really get back to exercise until around 6 weeks, with the exception of walking. And I'm looking forward to doing more of that once I hit the 2 week mark out from surgery. But I'm really looking forward to just feeling better in my skin and hopefully taking some of you guys on that journey with me. For me, it doesn't have to do with weight loss, though. Hear me loud and clear. I have weight to lose for sure. And like, I'm open to it. But the primary goal for me right now, especially because I'm breastfeeding and recovering from surgery and all of those other factors that come into play, I just want to feel really good in my body. And I just feel kind of like bleh right now, which is okay, right? There's reasons for that. And I'm not trying to rush that season. But for those of you who are in a similar season, even if it's got nothing to do with kids or C-sections or childbirth or anything like that, just feeling kind of like meh and wanting to feel better, maybe we can do that together. So definitely, as a takeaway, message me on Instagram. You can find me there at Elizabeth Benton and let me know if that's something you would be interested in, because I can put something together for us to go through the 12 weeks to transformation together, maybe June, July, August-ish timeframe. Let me know what you think about that. And this episode got really long, but if you have any other questions about Roman's birth, his birth story, my recovery, my priorities, my supplementation, nutrition, anything like that, let me know. And maybe Chris and I can do a follow-up Q&A episode. But for now, I'm going to count my lucky stars that I got this recorded while he slept, and I will chat with you guys really soon. Thanks so much for listening to the Primal Potential Podcast, where our goal is not to help you learn. Our goal is to help you change. This is a year of action. Take something you learned from this episode and put it into action in your life today. To learn more about working more closely with me and the Primal Potential team, please visit primalpotential.com/transform.